right now, though, in the studio with me, Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Welcome back.
Good morning, Leslie.
Oh, it was a big span there between skiing and riding this time.
Yeah, I think probably a lot of people really enjoyed that kind of springtime weather. You know, that low snow thing certainly got summer going in a hurry around here.
Yeah, by about 2 weeks. I mean, based on the aspen trees in my yard, or more.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I usually get the leaves by about May 31st, and 3 weeks then. Okay, so what have we got going? It's bike month, right?
It's bike month. So lots of things going on. And of course, you can probably find this information also on mountaintrails.org and also parkcity.org. So you can go to either one of those and get the same information. Starting off with, let's just kind of run through it quickly. We have the Young Riders Bike Swap starts tomorrow, 8 o'clock. Doors open at 8. People are usually lining up around 7. You can still drop off your bike. Important thing to remember, I think 2 years ago we started doing online registration for the equipment that you want to sell. It's a great way to get in and get out of there on a Friday afternoon. So it gets super busy on Friday afternoon. If you do your registration ahead of time, you're going to be a happy puppy. So you'll get a chance to look around and see what else is going on. And then it starts at Saturday at 8, and we finish up on Sunday. And if you're dropping off gear, you got to pick your gear up Sunday, I think, at 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock if it didn't sell. After that, we have Bike to Work Week. Bike to Work School, Bike to School Work is the following Friday. So we'll throw that into this report because we wouldn't be on before that. This event is going to be focused around the schools. So this will be kind of a little different than the previous program that we've done where, like for Mountain Trails, we've been on the corner of 224 and 248. Everything's going to be going on at the school. There'll be a few meeting places that you can once again find on PC.org. Just go to the bike event. And there'll be places to start riding, but there'll be bagels and coffee and stuff going on at the schools. So it goes from 7:30 to 10 o'clock in the morning. And that event is immediately followed by the Kohl's Bike Swap. How's this for? This is kind of like back-to-back, right? You know, stuff. Kohl's Bike Swap, you should be able to drop your bike off Thursday, Friday. The event's Saturday, Sunday. Starts at 8. If you sell your bike, it's a $20 fee, and that fee does go to support Mountain Trails. So thanks, Kohl's. We appreciate that.
Is there different equipment at the two, I mean, would you say, or just a little bit of everything at both?
Yeah, I think, and also there's a second shot. If you didn't sell your bike at one, you certainly had a chance. Or if you weren't here in town and you wanted to find something, especially like kids' bikes and stuff like that, you know, kind of get started, or when you're upgrading your kids' bikes, it's always a little bit expensive in the store. So, you know, being able to find one in a swap is probably a little easier on you. It's way smaller. I mean, the Young Riders Bike Swap, we probably have 500, 600 bikes, and the Kohl's Swap is probably 100 to 200 bikes, maybe. So definitely a different deal. And that's immediately followed the following Wednesday, the 23rd, is our Mountain Madness, sponsored by Epic Promise. And that is over at the Doubletree again. We're going to forego the movie this year. We felt like the entertainment kind of got in the way of just the socializing that is intended. And also, you know, this is a chance to find out about everything trail. So we want you to be able to actually focus on the other folks that are there. South Summit will be there, Summit Lands, Utah Open Lands, Wasatch Trail Alliance. You'll be able to see and hear about new projects. You can also discuss problems that you think you're having out on the trails, or things that tell us what we should be doing different. So it's a chance to socialize and actually just get to see what's going to be going on all summer long and where we'll be working.
Yeah. Any plans to do a kind of a recap of or an analysis of the leash, you know, off leash areas?
It's a good question. That was on my list of things to do, is get hold of Clay over there at Animal Control, because there was a recent editorial, and I think taking a look at the 2017 stats would be really good. So I'll try to see if I can find out. We invite Animal Control to this event as well, because I quite honestly, what we want is to have people there to be able to answer questions, help with issues, and also inform people what the best way may be, like in the case of Animal Control, what's the best way to actually report an incident? You know, what do you do if you have a problem? Hopefully we'll see if those guys will show up. I know they have a busy schedule, and it's sometimes hard to get out for one more thing. So we'll see what happens. But I'll try to find out, because that was something that was on my mind the other day, was just what happened in 2017. Because when we looked at it a couple of years ago when Clay started, it was fairly limited when you look at the number of user days that we think are out there, which is I sort of really feel comfortable now saying a million to a million and a half user days in the Trail system, and we have 6 or 7 bytes. Okay, and we can't really, they weren't even really recording whether they actually happened on the trails or whether they happened domestically, you know, in the urban setting. And we also had no idea just a bite is a bite or how severe of a bite. Did they call, you know, did you have to go to the hospital or did you just get nipped, you know, because someone's dog was a little, being a little bit aggressive, I guess. So, anyways, try to find out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, what else have you got?
That's it. You know, I think I covered it all. Steinville Basin also is having a similar event next Friday as well out in the Basin area. So if you live in out in the Basin that's or your kids go to school on that area, that would be the place to go there.
Yeah. Any plans for new trails?
Yeah, yeah. We're queuing up. Let's see, what can I announce?
I'm
not going to tell you any of it's going to be done in the next 6 months. No, hopefully all these projects will be. We are looking at a project that we're really excited about, which will be a finish off a loop that is Happy Gilmore to TM up on the Raderman Ridge and will be a directional flow trail down from Raderman Ridge back onto Old Ranch Road parking lot. So that'll give you that kind of logical 1 hour ride and really put a smile on your face to finish. So, and that also will helpfully make the Rambler, we haven't really decided what to do, but the existing Rambler trail there, maybe it'll become uphill for bikes only. Maybe it's a moot point. Maybe not that many people use it for a downhill anymore, especially if we build a different downhill trail. But that will become a much better hiking trail probably because it won't have it. We'll have very few bikes. It has very few bikes on it now because of because of Happy Gilmore. We're looking at the Bloods Lake Trail up in Bonanza Flat. That'll be the first major project up there. We don't have a complete approval process isn't finished up there yet, so hopefully we'll hear from City Council on that in the next week or two. But that part of the project, opening project, looks like it's going to go ahead this summer.
Yeah, so who's the authority on that, Wasatch County?
No, actually, I think
it's city property, but it's within county Wasatch County jurisdiction.
But it is private land. So the city owns the land, and the city has, so it's always dangerous on the radio. They have a lot of say in what goes on, but they're also trying to be respectful of the partners that pitched in to help make this happen. So, and there's a lot of jurisdictional issues because that piece of property sits on, you know, basically the county line of Salt Lake, Summit, Wasatch. It has fire issues. It has, you know, safety issues. So there's a lot going on in that. And but I think what you'll find is City Council, the Park City Council, is super aware and trying to be ultra sensitive about making sure everyone's included in the process.
Okay.
And then let's see, we're looking at some projects right up here in Old Town to make it easier to get into the Old Town trail system. So it actually will bring the trail system down a little lower. Those plans are not finalized. We just walked some of those areas. We will be, this will be exciting. You'll like this one. And this will be one of the first things on our hit list as soon as the moisture allows for it, is we will be putting Jenny's back into place. So you will, if you can skip the drift road, which you and I probably rode some back mm-hmm. in the old days. So that'll go in as soon as it's dry enough up there. That is on the ticket. And we've also been approved with the Park City Mountain to do a flow trail from the crest top of the Crescent Lift going north down to Mid-Mountain with a intermediate kind of beginner aspect as much as you can. I mean, it's a steep hillside, so it can't be completely beginner. But that'll be a directional trail to get people down to the Mid-Mountain. And with that, Tommy Two-Step will become uphill only for bikes.
Great.
If all goes well. If all goes according to plan.
And that would happen all this summer?
Yeah, we think that all can happen this summer.
Great.
Yeah, crazy.
All right, so we'll be calling in next week, or are you going to be here? Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
I'll give you a shout. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Charlie, thanks.
All right, thanks, Leslie.
After last month's state convention, two Democrats moved on to June's primary, Lee Castillo and Kurt Weiland. The winner of that primary will go on to face Rob Bishop, who has served as the congressman for District 1 since 2003 and represents the Park City area. In the studio with me to tell him a little bit more about himself and his campaign, I have Lee Castillo. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning to you, Leslie. Thank you for having me. And I'd like to say happy Friday to your listeners.
Yay. Well, just by begin by telling us a little bit about yourself and why you wanted to run for Congress.
Well, I am a native Utahn. I was born and raised in District 1. I actually live there now. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, and that's first and foremost. And second, I'm a family man. I have adopted a son. I have a foster son in my home currently, and I'm a single parent. I have worked effortlessly to help improve the lives of many people throughout our state, including here in Park City in Summit County. In various ways. I'm a clinician at the Utah State Hospital, and I am running for Congress because I was tired of hearing and seeing the things happening in our presidential administration. The divisive rhetoric that was being spewed by our own president was used to hurt people and to divide people, and I couldn't stand the sound of it because he not only targeted Hispanics, the disabled, women, Muslims. He targeted everybody, and those people are residents in District 1. And I needed to be a voice. I felt a calling to actually stand up to that the evil device of rhetoric and speak out in love.
Yeah, you have a Hispanic descent, it sounds like. Do you speak Spanish?
I speak fluent Spanglish.
Now, at the convention, had you collected signatures or,
no.
Or you neither of you won enough of the percentage to
no,
to move forward?
I did win more percentage wise, but I was not quite the 60% that I needed to secure the nomination.
Yeah. And I asked your opponent the same thing. I mean, why should voters replace Rob Bishop? He's a senior congressman. He's chair of the Natural Resources Committee. He's on the Armed Services Committee. He says this will be his last term. I mean, he, you know, some would say can do more for Utah than, you know, a rookie could.
Well, Leslie, I think he's currently serving his last term because I'm aiming to replace him. He has not listened to his constituents. He's done exactly opposite of what Park City residents and Summit County residents have asked him to do, is to protect the public lands. He is self-serving and refuses to meet with his constituents. I had a conversation with and next week I'll be going to high school to speak to high school students. And the teacher, one of the teachers informed me that Rob Bishop never returns any calls, refuses to speak to his students. And that is a common theme that I've heard as I've been campaigning, not only from just Democrats, but Republicans alike. And it's he is vulnerable right now because he has chosen, you know, to voice and represent oil and gas instead of the people who voted him in, and people are tired of that. We're tired of the poor air quality. We're tired of people drilling for oil. We want renewable energy sources, which I commend Park City and Summit County for. I mean, the proposal that you guys have for Public Lands Initiative, that's the right direction that we should be going throughout our state and throughout District 1, and the innovators here in this area, we should be following their direction. He should have listened to what they had asked instead of doing the exact opposite. In addition to that, he also has ignored the voices of the Native American people here. The public lands, it doesn't just affect, you know, people here in Summit County, the residents here, but the Native American indigenous people that were here before all of us were. And this is the biggest land grab that's happened in years, hundreds of years. And I these people have been oppressed. They continue to be oppressed and continue to be voiceless. And I respect the sovereignty of their nations, and I want to make sure that their voices are represented as well.
Rob Bishop reportedly has more than $400,000 in campaign funds. I mean, can you really be competitive against that?
I am a grassroots campaign, and even I joke around because I filed my own fee with my tax return. I'm a social worker. I don't make much money, and that's just the reality of it. And the I cannot compete with the $400,000, but what I can compete with is my authenticity and my desire to speak and listen to the people, whereas people are – they feel disenfranchised and unheard. And I'm willing to listen to those people.
And as somebody who probably lives paycheck to paycheck, do you have the time to get out and talk to the people?
I do, and I have been. I have I've made it a family affair. My son has been my campaign manager and has been with me at all the conventions and helping me man the tables. And it's been pretty an awesome and eye-opening experience.
But have you taken kind of a leave from your job, or no, you just do this after work and weekends?
As a clinician, a therapist, I work in the county jails, and I get a chance to chart my clients. I get a document at night, or you know, when I'm getting ready for bed. So there's time that my job is flexible, and my clients are served. If I can speak to the clients that I serve too, it's something else as a representative, I hope to address is the lack of mental health services that are available to Utahns and all of those in District 1. When I go see people in jails who have been found incompetent to proceed with their trials, I hear a common theme that they can't get their services, outpatient services, in a timely fashion. They can't afford their medications, and that ends up with them being incarcerated because those medications are needed to function on a daily basis. So instead of warehousing them in jails, we can be doing preventative care and actually providing services for those who need them.
So how would you distinguish yourself from your primary opponent, Kurt Weiland?
I think that during the convention, I think that the delegates distinguished me. I have been endorsed by the Hispanic Caucus, Education, Women's, Rural, Native American, Asian and Pacific Islander, Disability, the Stonewall, Environmental, Progressive, Senior Citizen, LDS, and Veterans Caucuses. So there's been a huge voice from the Democrats that they're in support of me because I take the time and I get a chance to listen. I'm a therapist. That's my job. And I take the calls. I don't have staff members to take the calls. I had pointed out during the convention that I'm the only person that at that time had met with Native American leadership and listened to their voices. Since then, my opponent at that time had sent one of his staff members to speak with a person from the Native American Voter League instead of going to meet him on his own. And I think that's the kind of stuff that Representative Bishop does. And I don't want to mimic Congressman Bishop. I want to be a representative for the people. I want to listen to the people. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to properly represent the people. I need to be the voice for the people.
So from what you've listened to the people, I mean, what are the top three issues, do you think, in this campaign for those you've talked to?
So I think that definitely medical care, insurance for everybody. And I can attest to that it's needed because it's clogging up our jails and our prisons. If we don't provide that service, then we're doing a disservice to not only those people but to our taxpayers, because those funds come from we pay for those things. In addition to that, I think that the public lands, the land grab, and the environment, and they're all really enmeshed together. And we tend to, as humans, to try to break them apart. But really, when you have a healthy environment and air that you can breathe, land that you're not extracting fossil fuels from that pollute the air and the water, and I can just say, like, on the drive up here, it's such a peaceful, beautiful drive, and it needs to stay that way. It needs to stay that way because, and we need to realize that environment, healthcare, and all those things are really interwoven. Because if you can't breathe, that directly affects your health, and if you can't get healthcare, you know, that it's just
But just by saying that, you're losing. I mean, a big portion of your supporters there in the Uinta Basin, right? I mean, they depend on the extraction industry, right, for their livelihoods.
And I'm not saying that we need to stop what's currently going on. What I'm saying is that we don't need to continue to sell off public lands to further extract. We have an opportunity. I think we should incentivize these areas so that we can people can start and begin to rely on renewable energy sources. The truth is that there will be an end to the fossil fuel era, and the real question is, are we going to be able to do something before it's too late for our climate and the world that we live in? Because the climate change is real, and the temperatures are rising, and that has a drastic impact on the way we live.
Okay. And a third issue, I mean, where do you stand on gun control?
Gun control. I think it's important. I had the opportunity in Ogden to meet with both Republicans and Democrats at a meet and greet. And some of the best ideas came from Republicans. And so I'm happy to be able to reach across that aisle and talk to them and to not just have my own opinions heard, but I want to be a voice of the people. So I need to listen. So I think banning bump stocks is it's needed. I would pass legislation for that. Extended magazines. There's no reason for the basic civilians to have those. Those are used for mass shootings. And I also think I personally don't like the semi-automatic weapons, but my constituents do. The people that I want to represent do. So I wouldn't be for banning that, because although I have a personal opinion about it, that's not what the people want. And I have an issue with being my own voice and taking – I need to listen. And I also think that I would love to see a buyback program for those who want to return their guns legally. I want to close the loopholes in the gun shows, and I want universal background checks that include nationwide background checks. When I adopted my son, I'll tell you, they did a really extensive background check because they want to make sure that I was a safe person to take care of this child. I want to make sure that we are doing the same for gun owners. We want to make sure that we have responsible gun owners without infringing on the Second Amendment, because I respect the Second Amendment.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners this morning?
I truly believe that Utah is for everybody. I am a new face for the Democratic Party. I think that I'm able to mobilize voices that already feel disenfranchised, and we have an opportunity to oust Rob Bishop, who no longer serves his constituents. And my website is utahisforeverybody.com, because I truly feel Utah is for everybody. And I truly believe that part of my calling was to also mention that God is for everybody. And I truly believe that as well. So Utah is for everybody, and we'd love your support.
Lee, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Lee Castillo, again, one of the two Democratic candidates on the June primary ballot. Well, the Park City Community Foundation just concluded the Solomon Fund grants process, awarding almost $90,000 to 17 different organizations. In the studio to tell us more, I have Diego Zegarra, Development and Special Projects Director for the Park City Community Foundation, along with Matt Tolliger with the Utah Olympic Park, one of the grantees. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hola, Leslie. ¿Cómo estás?
Bien. Hey, so give us the background there on the Solomon Fund.
Sure. A little over a year and a half ago, local philanthropist Bino Solomon approached the foundation, and we partner in this collaboration. We were going to address the lack of low-income Latino participation in sports and rec. We were focusing on kids' sports programs, and our main target was trying to increase access for these kiddos ages 6 to 12 to soccer camps, basketball leagues, skiing and snowboarding, because this is a ski town, and others.
So is this just a one-year deal, or is this an ongoing program?
It is an ongoing program, and last year we were able to award about $88,000, and this is our second year giving out grants. So this is one of the ways in which we support these organizations that are making meaningful strides towards the diversification of their programs.
All right, so how many applicants did you get this year?
It changes by organization. I think since inception, we've helped with over 1,000 unique registration. It may be 600 and something kids, but some of them have signed up for more than one opportunity.
Yeah. But so what happens, though, is that the organization applies to the community foundation to receive. I mean, they come up with the idea and the money that's needed.
Yeah. And I invited Matt today to tell us a little bit more about how we can partner with organizations. Usually we approach these agencies, say Ballet West, Youth Sports Alliance, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, and we provide translation services for their documents and marketing materials. We also put them in the hands of the families. And then additionally, we offer grants so they can increase their tuition waiver programs and offer better levels of scholarship, so to speak.
All right. So what was your proposal to the foundation and Matt?
Well, we'll back up a little bit. We were, I think, a little ahead of the curve. You know, the Olympic Legacy Foundation, was looking to scholarship kids a year ago. And we actually reached out to the Solomon Fund and participated in one of their kind of when they bring the families together. And we were offering scholarships for our kicker and glider program prior to applying to their program. You know, as a legacy foundation, we feel it's important not just to provide training facilities, but to provide opportunities, not just for kids that can afford it, but for kids who can't afford it. And, you know, the cross-country program was an ideal kind of fit. No need for equipment, no need for prior experience. So we went and we provided scholarship this winter for 11 kids to be in the kicker and glider program. And then we actually applied for a grant, and now we're actually partnering up grant-wise to put about 11 kids in our summer multi-sport program. So it was a pretty unique thing this winter. It was great to see those kids came out. We weren't sure if they would stick with it, you know, being a totally different kind of environment, and they were there right to the last day of practice and had smiles on their faces every day. And you know, our goal is to keep those kids involved and to continue to work with the Solomon Fund to hopefully get more kids involved in activities that we provide.
Mm-hmm. Was there an issue with language though in teaching the cross-country ski method?
No, you know, most of those kids know English. You know, again, the Solomon Fund is the bridge that we as an organization have been looking for over the past probably 5 years. We've been trying to figure out ways that we can get this demographic into, you know, programs. And Diego and Sarah have been the conduit to translate, as he said, to translate information, to make that connection, because that's really the tough part. So, you know, they translated all our information to the parents and the kids. They all spoke English, and you know, it was a great winter.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you find the kids? I mean, were they knew about it and wanted to sign up?
Well, I can let Diego kind of explain that, because, again, this is where the Solomon Fund is so crucial to connecting with these kids for all of our organizations.
So, Leslie, we provide the outreach piece. We also offer free translations for the organizations. I think to date we've translated over 130 different waivers, flyers, and program information. thanks to Sarah McCarthy, my colleague, who works tirelessly towards this end. And just to add, those 11 kids that participated, that was 11 out of 50 kids, which is mirroring the demographics of the Park City School District. That's our goal, ultimately. We would like to see that same level of participation. The school district is 21% Latino. What we would like to see in opportunities outside the school walls is that. And the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, with their Kickers and Gliders program, was able to do that this year.
All right. So that's why I guess I'm just, so what you would send home with the parents, though, were a list of different activities. I mean, again, how did the kids know that that program even existed? That's
yeah, I'll let him explain. We went and sat on a Sunday morning at St. Mary's, and all the families kind of came through, and they were able to sit and talk with us. And again, that's where we had we had translators sitting at the table where we could explain kind of the activities. And so that was, again, that the most crucial piece is that bridge to meet those families, explain to them what opportunities are out there. This spring I sat another one. That's where we got the kids for the summer camp, and it's great. And it's great to see all the other organizations sitting at the table, you know, really, you know, providing great opportunities, as we should in this community, for this demographic.
To add to that, thank you, Matt. We coordinate and organize two really large open houses, so to speak, registration events, where we invite, last time I believe we had 27 different agencies. We provide interpreters, and then we invite all the families to come. So they know they'll be able to communicate with the agency directly.
So what are some of the other activities that they have an opportunity to participate in?
You name them. We've worked with Basin Rec, The Mark, Egyptian Youth Theater. We've expanded beyond sports because we realized not all kids are athletic, and some of them are more inclined towards the arts. So this year was the first year we've given grants to arts organizations. Kimball Arts Center and the Egyptian Youth Theater were recipients of some funding. The National Ability Center, Park City Ice Arena, the Running Club, Soccer Club, SOS Outreach, Summit Bike Club. Yeah, we are partnering now with almost 36 agencies, and we are helping them connect with these Latino families.
Right. And do the children, I mean, do they get to pick more than one? I mean, participate in what, as many as they want, or?
As many as they want. If a kid would like to participate in something, we want to remove all barriers to access.
Okay. And so you said you've had in the first year 1,000 participants?
I think that since inception, we've been able to facilitate over 1,000 unique registrations through different programs. Youth Sports Alliance has been an incredible partner in this effort as well. And I commend them for they already had really significant outreach efforts towards the Latino community.
Yeah. So how did the Community Foundation decide to dole out the money? I mean, just based on what they could provide?
So we had an open cycle for the grants where we received 25 different organizations' proposals. And the Solomon Fund Advisory Committee graded them, reviewed them, and then decided based on how many kids we could impact and what was the interest from the Latino community, and that's how we allocated funding this year.
Yeah. Was there a program more popular than others?
You know, soccer is – I'm from Peru. It's a stereotype that holds true. We're crazy about it. So the Park City Soccer Club is an organization that is extremely popular with our families. I believe Matt coaches there as well, so he's – wearing two hats today.
Oh, yeah. 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 It's great, too. Again, it's interesting in our soccer community, we don't have a lot of Latino kids. So it's certainly a goal of the club to get more kids involved and really get more kids involved in general. It's just one piece of the puzzle, but trying to address all the kids in the community.
Yeah. And are we seeing a balance between boys and girls?
Yes. I think that we are opening it up to every single kid. There are opportunities that are more appealing to our girls, like, say, Ballet West, for example. They've come to the table, and it's proven to be a really strong partnership. We've been able to increase their Latino participation at the Peggy Bergman Academy out of the Junction from 1.5% to close to 10%. And that has to do with the fact that there was a really clear appetite from the Latino community to participate in these activities.
Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
No, I just want to, you know, thank the Solomon Fund again. As I mentioned, this was they are a key piece to our foundation, kind of trying to reach out to to different demographics in the community.
I'd like to thank Bino Solomon for her vision to start this up, Molina Healthcare for helping us out at our last registration event, and Storm Cycles. Todd Henneman has come to the table and has helped us procure some bicycles for kids. There's a large trail system here, and we're going to be able to connect some of those kiddos with those opportunities as well.
All right, Diego, Matt, thanks for your time this morning. Well, this week, the artist who was selected for Summit County's and Park City's public art project, The Future Is Now, Bisco Smith, and his assistant hosted youth workshops. Starting today, the mural will be created over the next several days. Bisco joins me in the studio along with his assistant and Jocelyn Smith, the community manager for the Summit County Park City Arts Council. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jocelyn, why don't you start and give us a little bit of background about how this came to be?
Sure. So this kind of all began in 2016 when the Summit County Public Art Advisory Board and Basin Recreation and Arts Council all came together and began to explore ways to engage local youth with a public art project. And so the result is The Future Is Now, which is the current project, and it's designed to engage local youth, local young people in the creation of an interactive street art mural right under it's the tunnel under Highway 224. And we look at that tunnel as a literal and figurative connection point for Park City. And so the partners put out a call for artists in December 2017, and we made our final selection in March, and the result is Bisco Smith from New York. And so he's an American visual artist with us. We're super excited. And we, you know, one big draw with Bisco Smith's work is we really thought that the, you know, young people would connect with his work. It's really embedded in lyrics and music. And, you know, that just felt like a perfect connection for us.
All right, Bisco, let's get you to turn that mic down a little bit. Yeah, towards your, there you go. Right. And tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm an artist from New York, and my background is skateboard, graffiti, and just that culture, and I've been doing that for maybe 25 years. Through that journey, my mother's a teacher, so I got into working with kids and, you know, giving my art experience back to the youth, trying to inspire them, and I've been fortunate enough to do projects in many different places with young people. So when we heard about this project, The Future Is Now, that term is something that I sort of always live with. Create the future is a saying I use all the time. So when we found it and Jasmine actually discovered the project, it was like a no-brainer. Wow, this is, we can work with kids, we can talk about the future and use our influence. And I just feel fortunate to be here and use my energy and hopefully inspire and teach the kids like how to take their thoughts and the work to a higher place, you know.
So there were a couple of workshops held this week that, mm-hmm. that you conducted. Tell me what happened there.
Well, we did. I did a brainstorming session with them to sort of look into the future and think positive ways and statements that can help better the future and paint a better picture of the future or a positive picture of the future. And everyone was so open, and to be around kids from, I think it was like 11 to 17, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
To see their views, I mean, it's a beautiful moment when they really get open and explain how they see the future. And I think we came up with all these different statements. Jasmine and I watched all the footage last night and wrote them down. And it's just amazing to see, and to see through their lens how the world exists today and where they want to see it tomorrow. So we have all these statements from them, and they created art around these statements, and they're going to come with us over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and I'm going to help them transcribe those statements to the mural. So I'm also a freestyle artist, is what I like to say. I have an idea of the process. I have a sketch as to how I want to approach it, but it's less about me and it's more about them, and I want really to reflect the kids in this community, and I'm going to help them with my style and my aesthetic and my tools, but I really want the mural to reflect the young people. You know?
So what do you envision will be on the walls?
My work is text-based, and it's all a lot of writing, and I find writing to be a meditation. I find it to be a way to perpetuate and propel like a energy forward. So it's going to be a very text-based piece of work, super colorful, and it's going to be interesting to see where they take it. And then I'm going to take what we've all done together and tie it, try to make sure it's unified at the end. So they'll be with us Saturday and Sunday, and I have Monday and Tuesday open if needed. But my thing is let them do their work, and then I'll bring my work and unify it as a whole.
Yeah. So will they be doing some of the actual painting?
Oh, yeah, definitely. For sure. I mean, I think part of the whole thing is for them as a group of kids that don't necessarily know each other, they're different age groups, to all have ownership in this one piece. And I think when they all can feel like a piece of a greater puzzle or picture, you know, it's just a stronger community bond for them.
Some of the critics, you know, they're out there, ask, yeah, what's the difference between this and graffiti?
I mean, you know, that's in the eye of the beholder. You know, we were just actually having this conversation in the hallway, too. I would say graffiti at this point in 2018 is a very viable art form. And it's in museums. It's covered in million-dollar artworks by Banksy up the street. And people are being prosecuted for going over this quote-unquote graffiti. So I think it's in the eye of those. It's art, you know, and it's up to the viewer. And I think just to, like, kind of underline that, and I've told the kids, and I've sort of emphasized where we are in 2018 with graffiti. You don't have to write on the walls. And my job or my goal is not to come here and teach the kids how to write graffiti all over town. My goal is to teach them an aesthetic that they already love and how to take it to a higher place. And now there's all these different places. You can show in galleries. You can travel the world. You can do huge community murals. That's where graffiti is in 2018. And it'll always have young people writing on walls because that's what they've done since cavemen, you know. But I think now there is a viable source of expression and a place you can take it that can build a beautiful life for you, not necessarily go the other side. But it's a loaded word, and the controversy will forever be there. And maybe that's why it's such a popular thing, because, I don't know, there's so much conversation around it, you know?
Yeah. Can you recall some of the statements that they made that you intend to maybe get on the wall?
I'd say, like, one of the major words, like the things that resonated with me, was peace. And there was a conversation about war and how we're a country of war, and there's all this stuff happening in a time that we need peace. Actually, interesting thing I took from it was that there was a lot of anti-technology in the conversation, which it was interesting hearing that coming from the young people. I think there was also a lot about being comfortable in yourself and for them as people to make others feel comfortable. I feel as young people, maybe they feel like there's a lot of pressure to be a certain kind of person. And a lot of their expression was just be who you want to be what's in your heart and be open to others. You know, so it really was a big range. But I think at the end of the day, like, they all had this very warm place for the future in them. And there wasn't really, with the exception maybe some of the video game influence, it was a more positive view of the future, which I feel we need more of. Because if you look at film, you look at a lot of what we see today is like these post-apocalyptic, dirty futures. And if we're not, like, inspiring with hope for the future, then where are we going, you know?
So how many kids were involved, Jocelyn?
We had about 80 kids sign up, and throughout the 2 days, we actually had about 60 actually show up to the workshops through, you know, range of ages, 11 to 17. And so they're all invited to come and paint with Bisco Smith this weekend, which is a really cool opportunity. And so we are so excited to see kind of how these ideas will be reflected on the mural.
Okay. So was the tunnel closed off then this weekend?
You know, it's actually still open for pedestrians. We do have some caution cones just so we don't have bikers whipping around the corner and hitting paint buckets. But yeah, anyone's welcome to come down and check it out and watch the process. And the kids will be there from noon to 6 on Saturday and Sunday this weekend to, you know, help Bisco produce the mural. And then we actually have a kind of a public launch event at the tunnel on Monday, May 14th, from 5:30 to 6:30. And it will just be a really casual celebration. We're all going to gather. All the partners are going to gather at the tunnel. And, you know, Bisco might speak. We all might just speak. We might have some kids come and talk about the process. So just a celebration of you know, the future is now. And we're really psyched.
All right. Look forward to seeing it. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Jocelyn Scudder and Bisco Smith. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.